Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jen Taylor Campbell. I'm a birth and bereavement doula, as well as an adoption and surrogacy doula. Doula means woman who serves. And although I love happy births, adoptions, and surrogacy, the pro bono part of my business is in bereavement. I'm here to help you. I'm also mom of 18, yes, 18 children, with over 30 years experience in the trenches as a mom myself. We have a huge blended family, and I've also experienced the loss of our adult son. Remember, give a shout out to those brave enough to share their stories on how they have become parents. Let's dive in. Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm Jen Taylor, your host, and I'm with Tiffany Alvarez. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. It's so good to see you again.
Surviving the storm of, the centuries that's going on around here.
Where are you?
Roseville. Right below.
Oh, yeah.
Well, a few hours from where
you are. Yeah. Yeah. So. It's pouring out right now. It's been crazy in the West Coast. I'm really excited to have you on, Tiffany. You were on, we connected because I stalked you on Facebook, on your Facebook group, Miscarriage Break the Silence. And we just started connecting, and I was basically reaching out like, hey, I'm a bereavement doula and you have a miscarriage thing and anything that I can do to help type of thing. And you and I became friends through that. And then you were on my podcast, and crazy story, you're my number one podcast episode.
Crazy.
And I love analytics because I'm kind of a geek, but also I love analytics to see what's really resonating with other people. What do they want to talk about? And one of the things we talked about in that last podcast was, one in four pregnancies ends in miscarriage, and that's not even ectopic pregnancies and other stuff. It's not. Yeah. And, we don't talk about it a lot. So update me on anything for you that's going on with your group or you personally.
Group wise, it's just kind of blown up actually. I think since we last talked, I don't even know how many I've gained, but I'm over 5,000 followers now. So it's kind of a lot. You don't really realize how much work it is to go into there. But it's crazy though. Cause I don't do that much on there, but I affect so many people, and it's so crazy. How it works. It's just, I don't know. It's very humbling almost just to see how much you help people by just telling them you're not by yourself and everything like that. I don't know. It's just, it's crazy to me.
I have a loose policy. I have no policies, but basically if I interview someone, it has to be at least a year, and it's been 4 months, and it's crazy how much your Facebook group has blown up and that you're the number one podcast episode that I've had in 6 years, not today, this week, in 6 years of podcasting, you're my number one episode. And so that speaks volumes to what women need. And I know it's only been 4 months. So I want to, has anything changed for you in the last 4 months?
Other than regular life things, no, not really. We're still not going to be trying yet. So we're still just kind of waiting on the right time for that. But other than that, no, not really. Just life, work.
You, your first episode, and I'm going back and forth to get information. Your first episode, we talked about you had 3 second trimester miscarriages. And at the end, we kind of ended, I think, talking about you guys weren't ready to try again yet. And so, it's only been 4 months. I want to ask you one thing, because I didn't notice this the last time, but Miscarriage Breaking the Silence, I went and got the URL, and the URL is Psalms 34:18. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me the significance behind that?
For me personally, I'm very heavy on my faith in general. So it's just, I don't know. I don't really know how to explain it, but that's just, it's what's gotten me along the way with all my losses personally. I definitely feel like if I didn't have like my faith and everything like that, then I wouldn't have made it through them.
I'm also a God girl, so I get that. Yeah. I looked it up. When I saw in the URL, I was like, wow, how did I miss this before? So for those of you who don't know, Psalm 34:18, this is in the NLT version. There are lots of versions, so don't beat me up about that. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. And I know in the New King James, it says a contrite spirit, but essentially it's an uplifting. I have, because you and I both work in with people that have had miscarriages, I actually have like a full sheet, a full page of scriptural references that can really comfort people who are going through any struggle, but specifically, you know, when you're struggling with miscarriage and loss, there's definitely, there are definitely some that can really help. And so I love that. That's close to my heart, that that scriptural reference is, you're not blatant about it, but it's there that, you know, your faith is getting you through. So in that discussion, is it, it's easier for me to have faith when things go wrong, but for some people you really question and are angry with God. How has that journey been for you with not being able to get pregnant or not being able to meet, you have gotten pregnant, not being able to give birth?
So it's definitely, it's conflicting at times, because definitely, like I said, like that's what I lean on, and I like to think, you know, just, you know, especially, you know, a lot of people do, unfortunately, like when things are bad is when they, you know, lean towards their faith. And I just try, and I mean, probably more, I think if anything, like losing our kids has kind of brought me closer, which, you know, for a lot of people, it's the opposite. So that's like another thing on like on my page, like when I post things, I try to be mindful of that, because not everybody, you know, not everybody believes what I believe. So I don't want to like push it on them or anything like that. But I know for me personally, it's helped me so much. Like I said, I don't think if I had my faith, I wouldn't have made it through them. And I think that having that has really brought me closer to it. And I don't know. It's really hard to explain it. Like just,
it is,
but I just know like there has been times, of course, where I've, you know, questioned, you know, like, why would you do this? Like, you know, but everything happens, you know, unfortunately, for some reason. So, you know, the biggest thing I know that we've been working on now, or at least I have been, when like referencing having kids, it's not like, you know, if it happens or this, that. I'm like, I'm trying to be more like when it happens. So more like putting it out there, I guess some people will say that's what you call that.
Right.
But I'm trying to stay off of like the, if we do have a kid, like if we do have a baby, like more like, and like, oh, well, when this does happen, like, because I know that's something like I've read, you know, recently, you know, my daily, like, you know, readings I do are saying like, you know, don't question things. Like if you think it's going to happen for you and you trust that it is, then start away from the if and go back with the, you know, when it does. Just because it's not here yet, it doesn't mean it's not going to come.
Isn't it hard in any situation when you are a person of faith that, like, I want to be like, okay, God, here's my outline. I bullet pointed it for you. It's ready to go. You just need to make the things happen. Right. And it's the opposite. It's us relinquishing to what God's timeline is and situation. And we don't have, he doesn't give us this outline of bullet pointed when things are going to happen situation. And, you know, I know that that's a struggle with a lot of people, and it has been in my life, where I'm like, okay, what is God's agenda for me? And then I'll figure it out, like getting out of my own way to allow things to happen with the assumption that, like you said, like with that assumption that things are going to happen. I think another question, because you're talking about, I remember when we talked the first time, I asked you if you had given birth to any children, and you said, no, it's only been the 3 second trimester losses, which is so heart-wrenching. Any woman who's been pregnant, just heart-wrenching. Have you and your husband considered adoption?
It's been a thought. It's been more of a if we ever win the lottery type thing, because unfortunately it's very expensive for it. Or actually, like, more along the lines, like, if, you know, if we win the lottery, like, we're going to get a surrogate. Because, like, in the long run, it's not anything with the babies or, like, with either one of us. It's just, well, obviously, it's, like, with, you know, my issues that I have. But, you know, just all those things cost so much money. But that's definitely something. And if anything, like, I have my godson and my nieces and nephews and, you know, work. I work with kids every day, all day. So, you know, I'm around kids that, you know, kind of helps a little bit.
Tell me, let's talk about that more. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Let's talk about the coping skill sets, but they're not really skill sets. I mean, I feel like you can be two very different things. You can be really happy for other people and their parenting journey and supportive and loving and really almost traumatized by your own. And those can happen at the same time. It doesn't mean you hate everybody's kids because you can't have your own. It doesn't work that way at all. But it can be triggering to be around other people. So let's talk about some of the things you do to kind of cope or work through that.
The biggest thing for me is just to, I've had to put in my mind that it's, you know, that it's nobody's reasoning or nobody's fault, like the things that we've gone through. So yeah, like it is hard, like, you know, when other people I know are getting pregnant and having babies and, you know, all this, like, you know, just even being around the kids sometimes. But, you know, I've had to work into my mind that, you know, it's nobody's fault. So I can't, like, be mad at somebody else for, you know, being pregnant or, you know, complaining that they're, you know, things when they're pregnant. Cause I know, like, the struggles, like, when you're pregnant that you go through. So it's like, I can't be, you know, upset, like, oh, well, you know, I wish I could, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's a struggle because I still sometimes even do it. But, you know, it's more, I have to catch myself now when I see myself doing those things.
I think it would be tremendously challenging to do that. I know when I was going through infertility, you feel like every pregnant woman is in your face, you know, or people that are complaining about their kids. Well, kids are really hard, so they're easy to complain about. And also, you love them and you love being a mom, but, you know, and we all have different ways to cope. It's really, there's not a right answer to that, right? We all have different ways to cope and still be really hurting inside and really happy for someone at the same time. What do you feel like? So there's a lot of interaction in the group and I'm there, but not like you are. Have you seen any, since it's grown so much, any commonalities in what people want or what makes them feel better or the discussions that they have, what pictures really hit home the most?
A lot of people I've noticed, they just want some simple things. Like sometimes I notice, like if I post, like, you know, I posted like TED Talks on there that I thought were like really great and like people don't watch those. I don't know if it's just like, you know, people are just so busy they don't have time. But I just noticed like post like the more simple pictures and simple, just like quick to the point, like that's how I feel type things. Like those are the ones I usually get the most response to. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it's just, you know, because I can just post something and just it be quick for me to post and, you know, something like that. Because usually when I post things, it's a picture or a saying or something I find that I feel like resonates with me. So I just post it. And then just the people, like, I'll either get comments on it or I've gotten messages as well. You know, people just tell me, like, having a hard time, this and that. So a lot of the time when people come to me, it's just more like they're just not having a good day.
Yeah.
So I just try and like put myself in their shoes because I, you know, we've been there, so I can, you know, try my hardest to understand what they're going through and just kind of, you know, do the best I can. It's hard, even like, you know, that I've went through it. Everybody's story is different, so it's still sometimes it's hard for me to kind of like help them, but just, I mean, I try and do my best too.
It's hard, I think, not to be triggered within your own story while you're helping someone else. And so I think I know. I mean, you started this to help yourself and help other people. And I know that a lot of that is really cathartic. Like it really, you really do process through your own grief while you're helping other people. And it triggers your own grief at the same time. And that balance is, it's challenging to navigate sometimes, I think. And you're right. Every person's story is different. So like, I think we can all agree, you hear someone's story and you just think, oh my gosh, I can't imagine going through that, because it's different than our own story. What about, I've noticed a big difference. So when I'm working with women, I notice a big difference when a woman is able to process the birth, because oftentimes with a miscarriage, it's like the baby's gone. There's no birth certificate, you know, until after 20 weeks. For a lot of these women, you were in a different situation though.
Yeah.
What, your gestation, did you get birth certificates?
No, like with our last one, we almost hit 20, but we were like right on the cusp of like 19 and a half. I mean, I still consider that I gave birth to all three of my kids.
You did.
They were, you know, they were not like little humans. They looked exactly like little people.
Yep.
So it's like, I consider it that I did. But I know, like, especially like the people that have like the really early miscarriages, like it really, I think the most, what is the word I'm looking for? The thing that kind of like blew me away the most, a lot of people, is that like how many people tell them like that it doesn't matter to a certain, you know,
right,
certain, you know, certain weeks or this or that, or, you know, they'll even come to me and they'll be like, oh, well, mine, you know, isn't as bad as yours. I'm like, no, it is.
Yeah.
Like, you see, you know, you're pregnant. That's, everybody knows. Like, most of the time, that's it. Like, you're, everything just changes.
You're pregnant, so, and you've lost that baby regardless. That's the same. I know hormonally and physically, the further along you are, the more challenging it is. But it doesn't matter. I've worked with people as early as 6 weeks. So it's still the loss of a child, and you still delivered that child. And I think a lot of what's helped the women I work with is to think about that. That was the baby's birthday, and naming the baby and having something. Some women are early on, they don't have anything representative. Like I have an adult son who passed away, and I have tons of pictures. I have a vase that was his, you know, I will never not miss him. However, I have all these memories. I have all of these experiences that I had with my son, as a person after pregnancy. And when you're robbed of that, it's hard to connect with this child. And I find that women do much, much better, and their experience is better, and their grief is better if they can welcome that baby and have that birthday and name the baby and have something that represents the child, whether it's a statue or a piece of jewelry or whatever it is. It really makes a significant difference in their healing. So I didn't know if you kind of, you too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's kind of been like a thing I've distinctly talked to with a couple people as well. Just like, you know, well, have you named your baby? Because for me, like, I feel like that really, like you said, that kind of brings it like a little bit more closer to you. And like you said, I feel like I do as well feel like it's a good thing for helping you, like, you know, not get past it, but, you know, help you to get through it at least.
Right. It's not like a one and done. I mean, the medical society and society in general kind of expects you to walk it off and just move on with your life. Because if you don't have a breathing baby at the end of it, then it doesn't really count for anything. And that is so dismissive and so hurtful for the woman who is struggling through that. So that's like the single biggest thing that makes me just absolutely furious. And it's not the medical provider's job to make all that right, but there could be things set up to make it easier. The grief doesn't go away. You learn to live with it and manage it in a different way that's healthy. Would you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because like even for myself, like after, you know, losing the three, like for each one of them, I think, you know, they only give you the 3 days of bereavement. With one of them, I even had to like almost argue with them about it because they didn't want to give it to me. I'm like, no, like I just lost a child. Like that's, I'm going to take that. So
yeah,
like she's grieving. And then after that, like it's medical, you have to get a medical leave and then get, you know, permission to come back. And that's, so it's like, yeah, it's definitely not treated like it should be at all. And that's kind of like a thing that eventually I'd like to, you know, work on as well. Like, and another big thing that I want to work on, like in the future, just to figure out how to do it, is like we talked about before, like making people more aware of like their options after they have, you know, their children. And like, because I could have had my other two children as well cremated. So like not knowing that until the last one, when I was, and the reason I even knew that was because I was in the hospital for 3 days, so I had time to sit there and read the paperwork.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I have found, because I work with the hospitals a lot as a doula, and I work with the bereavement programs in our hospital, and the programs themselves are really good. And the people working those programs are wonderful.
Amazing.
The problem is you have to sit and have a very tough conversation with the parents at the time that this really tough situation is happening, because by the time they sit down and read it, if they ever read the information, it's already too late. And I think that that's the biggest thing for me too, is, you know, when a woman is miscarrying in the ER, I want to get that phone call. I want to be at the hospital. I want to get called. I want to go over that paperwork, right? Because that's the last thing. That's the last thing you want to do is read paperwork about the child that you just lost while you're sitting in the hospital. You know, that's,
you don't want to think about like what you're going to do. Like you're just too in the moment.
Yeah.
So to speak, but, like you're not thinking about like, well, what am I going to do when I leave here? Like with our first one, like we left the hospital and that was it. Like we didn't know, like we had options. We don't even know what happened with him afterwards.
Right.
So you know, if there could have been somebody there, like, these are your, you know, things you can do, like, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
But,
yes. And you, I mean, I think in a lot of situations, one, what a horrible time that you need to advocate for yourself. I don't think a woman, a bereaved couple needs to be advocating for themselves to find out, well, wait, well, hang on a second. Well, what can we do? You're not going to do that. You're overwhelmed. And also, yeah, it's just, it's so hard. And then to find out later there is something, it's like reliving that devastation all over again, or feeling guilt and shame that you didn't ask questions. And so that's the part that I would like to change the most also. What was the process for you? Remind me and our listeners, what was the process for you in getting pregnant? I remember some of it. I know as soon as you say it, I'm going to be like, that's right. But the process for you in getting pregnant and trying to maintain your pregnancy specifically.
So it's kind of been, I mean, for the long run, we know as of right now, for the next time, I'll be getting, the cerclage, the cervical cerclage. I'll get that within as soon as possible before 12 weeks. They told me like, it's going to happen as soon as possible. And then I will also get Lovenox, so I'll do daily Lovenox shots. Well, unless they, you know, do something else, but those are blood thinners, because I get blood clots as well.
Oh yeah, okay.
And the antiphospholipids, the big old long words, but yeah, so I get the blood clots as well. So they'll have that, and I'll get the cerclage, and then probably be on some kind of like progesterone or something as well.
I have a mom right now, one of my doula clients, who got the cerclage at 20 weeks and was on the progesterone suppositories, and she doesn't have the blood clotting disorder, but the everything, and like we didn't think she'd make it 2 weeks, and she's hitting 38.
Yeah.
38 weeks.
Yeah, it's been a journey for us, because after the first time they were like, oh, you have a blood clotting disorder. I'm like, okay. So with our second, we were doing the Lovenox shots, and then we still lost them. I'm like, oh, you have a, you know, incompetent cervix. So we're going to sew you up next time you get pregnant. So then I got sewn up. She was held in there good, but the blood clotting came. So then we had the placenta breva.
Yeah.
happened. So that took her from that. So now that's where they're saying they're at the point where it's like you're gonna get this, this, and this, and hopefully that works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, it's just a guessing game.
I'm so
This
glad that you
is
said that. Because
so
with, you know, I went through infertility 32 years ago, and I gave birth to a daughter, and I knew that genetically I had a higher chance of passing on the fertility issues that I had. And sure enough, you know, she has them. And you would think, because she's 31, lots has changed since I went through things, and nothing has changed since I've gone through things.
No, I think the only thing is they have met better terms for them. I don't think a lot's really changed because, like,
No.
they don't know what's going to happen inside of somebody. So it's just more than like they just have terms for stuff now for like what could be wrong or what things they can pinpoint that is wrong.
But the things that they do for them really haven't changed much in the 30 years, in my experience.
My mom, she had had to get the cerclages as well for me and my sister.
Yeah.
So same thing, 30 something odd, some odd years later, and it, you know, yeah.
And nothing's really different, except for some names that are different. They change some of the how they say it.
Yeah, basically.
I know you're waiting, and I'm certainly never going to be, would never be a person that would ever pressure you about that information because what you've been through is so challenging. Outside of trying again, what is on the horizon for the group? Do you see anything changing in the group, as far as what you offer or how you can help people or what you would do is it, as it continues to grow? With work, with anything else health-wise outside of pregnancy? That was a lot. Those were a lot of questions.
I know, let me think. So page-wise, I want to try and start doing more videos because I feel like
Oh, good.
sometimes people like those a little bit. I did one before and I got pretty good, like, you know, people really like that. So I
Yeah.
want to be able to find time to do that, you know, even if it's just starting like, you know, once a week, once every couple of weeks. And then, like I was saying earlier, I want to try and find ways to get like out there a little bit more. I don't even, like I said, I don't know where to really start, but I know one at Sutter's right here by my work. And that's where I had lost two of them. So I would like to go there and see like if there is options for that, you know, to go into the hospitals and be there for people, you know, because it's great to have the staff there and everybody there that helps you and is really caring, but to have somebody that actually like goes has went through it, I feel it's a lot different. So that's kind of something I want to eventually work on. I don't know how, but I'm gonna
I do.
try and
I'm
figure
going to be sending you information. I'm so excited. I
it
did not expect
out.
this. I am
Yay,
super
please do.
excited about this. Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, there are ways to pretty easily and inexpensively get specific training that would just bridge the gap between your experience and other experience and the hospital. And then I think it's just a matter of jumping in and doing it, knowing it's going to be a very frustrating process. You'd think it would be so easy, right? Look, a woman comes into the ER or into labor and delivery, and she's losing a baby, and it's uncomfortable for a lot of medical professionals. It's tough to deal with. Just call me up and I'll take a lot of the stress and the pressure off of you. You'll still have to be the physician or the nurse, but I'm going to take a lot of the pressure off you. I'm going to have those tough conversations. I'm going to make your job faster and easier. All you have to do is call me. And you'd think, oh, they'll be calling you constantly. And then when they don't, it's very perplexing. Like, okay, I know that there's a good program, but I can bridge the gap and take all that pressure off of the hospital staff. And so I'm so glad that you're interested in doing that. You have to really hit a certain point in your own grieving journey to be able to really sit with someone else. So, yeah, but
And
I.
I think I've gone to a good space with it. I think, yeah, so I think that would be kind of my next move I would want to do.
Tiffany, I'm
So.
so glad that we touched base again and I had you on. And I think you should do little snippets of video about, I think it makes a huge difference. It's just a little bit more personal and it's you, the face of the page, you know, who's had this struggle that birthed this Facebook page. And so I hope to see that.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on it and see, like, I don't know, maybe find topics people want to hear about or talk about or something. There has to be stuff because a lot of people message me like, "We know more about you," so I usually just post your video. I'm
Oh,
like, "Here,
I mean,
guys,
perfect.
here's
Yeah.
a video."
But
So.
yeah, little, which is great. That's a great way to tackle it. And also just little snippets, maybe about certain things very specifically, you know, like shorter little bite size. But yeah, I what you're doing is amazing. It's making a huge impact. In the last several months, I've definitely seen a difference in the online presence and in your presence. You know, you can be a quiet, more introverted person and still really, really share. And I know you, that was harder for you to really share, but you've just, it's been so great. It's been so great. I love what you're doing for women.
Thank you. You too. You do a great thing too.
Well, that's
Everything
why
you like,
we
even
like
treating
together.
people the last time. Yeah.
Thank you
So
so
yeah,
much for
it's
being on.
a journey. Of course.
Yeah. Quite a journey.